Is the Brian Laundrie manhunt over? Human remains turn up in the Florida swamp today. If it is Brian, what about justice for Gabby? Can her family still find closure? And then does the criminal investigations plural end with the manhunt? And as for Laundrie's parents, do they still need their lawyer? The legal experts are here tonight weighing in on Banfield. Welcome to Banfield. After 38 days of searches and sightings and some surprises, the Brian Laundrie manhunt appears to have ended where it began, the Carlton Nature Reserve. Human remains were found in that swamp today. Autopsy results are going to take a few days yet, but most signs are pointing to it being Brian. His parents were right there today when the remains were discovered. For weeks, they'd been saying he was in that swamp, missing after going on a hike. And to be sure, it is little comfort for them that they were finally proven right. And here's something more. Their lawyer, who has been saying so much and yet saying so little, said a lot tonight. Let me tell you just a couple of things that he just happened to drop moments ago on CNN. Stephen Bertolino said that the family actually did decide on their own that it was time to go in and check out the reserve. They were followed closely by law enforcement as they went in this morning. 30 minutes into their walk and about 1 to 2 miles, Stephen Bertolino says, from that parking spot where the silver Mustang was found, that's where Chris Laundrie, Brian's dad, decided to venture off the path about 20 feet into the thicket. 20 feet off that trail, he said, in bramble, he discovered something that looked like a white dry bag. And if you're a hiker, you know what that is. It's what you put your things in when you're going to go into wet territory to keep your things inside dry. The wet dry bag, he said, surprised him. He didn't touch it, according to Stephen Bertolino. Instead, he decided to alert law enforcement. He said he was followed by people who were filming him for a news outlet. When asked if maybe he had placed it there, that was what Stephen Bertolino said. How is that possible? Followed by law enforcement, followed by news people. It was on camera. And then the next thing Stephen Bertolino said is that his client, Chris Laundrie, was shown a photograph of a backpack that was found not too far away. And the photograph was Brian's backpack. At that point, Bertolino says Mr. and Mrs. Laundrie were asked to leave the park. For Roberta Laundrie's part, her lawyer says that she never did leave the trail. It was only the father that ventured 20 feet off the trail and made the discovery of that dry bag. Let me show you how he phrased it in a phone conversation with CNN's Chris Cuomo tonight. Take a look.
As you're aware, the FBI and the Northport Police Department and our state and local law enforcement partners have been searching the area of the Carlton Reserve for Brian Laundrie, a person of interest in the murder of Gabby Petito. Earlier today...
Is the area that they were searching when these discoveries were made, is this a new area that the parents hadn't informed authorities about before?
No, not at all. Indeed, this is the very area of the park that we initially informed law enforcement on, I believe it was September 17th, that Brian would be most likely in the preserve in this particular area, as I know it, near the bridge. I think it's the bridge that might connect the Myakkahatchee Environmental Park with the Carlton Reserve.
Was this a very deep way or distance into the preserve?
No, Mr. Laundrie informed me that it was quite near the entrance. He didn't put an exact distance on it. He put a time frame of about 30 minutes in. But I would guess it could be a mile or two into the preserve.
Then I'll probably do hogwash. What does all of this mean for the people who seem to be forgotten today? And that's Gabby Petito's family. Was this the outcome that they were dreading? Did any chance of justice perhaps die with Brian Laundrie, if that's him? I'm joined by News Nation's Brian Enten, who is live at the Carlton Reserve. Brian, I can only imagine that you are pretty surprised to hear some of the things that Stephen Bertolino is saying to Chris Cuomo tonight about the decision by the Laundries. It is true, just to make a decision to go and look at the reserve today, and 30 minutes later, lo and behold, they did what dozens and dozens and millions of dollars could not do for 38 days. It is not lost on you, I'm sure, the unbelievable, uncanny coincidence that this brings.
Yeah, it's certainly strange that for 5 weeks, the FBI, with all the technology you can imagine, and the drones and the planes and the canines and the swamp buggies, that they weren't able to find anything. And then the Laundries came out here this morning and identified this pretty quickly. I also spoke to Stephen Bertolino on the phone earlier today. It was the first time I'd heard his voice. We'd just been texting for the last 5 weeks. He would never answer the phone. We finally spoke. He basically said the same thing that he said tonight on CNN. A few interesting other tidbits. He said it was yesterday that the Laundries, Chris and Roberta, first contacted him and said that they wanted to come back out to the reserve now that it was open to the public and search for Brian. And Mr. Bertolino told me that he then called the law enforcement officials that he's been in touch with throughout this entire thing and said, look, the Laundries want to go out and search now that things are back open. They're going to be there at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning, which was this morning, and you can meet them there. They will be there, and they are going to search. And Mr. Bertolino says when the Laundries arrived, there were two law enforcement officers who were here who met up with the Laundries. And then they went into the reserve, as he described, to start searching, and that it was Christopher Laundrie who found a bag with some of Brian Laundrie's belongings inside, and that it was the two police officers that found the backpack, which led to the human remains.
So, Brian, I'm going to actually play that moment where we can hear Bertolino saying to Chris Cuomo about the items that, Chris Laundrie just stumbled upon 30 minutes into his effort. Again, 38 weeks into the effort, it took Chris Laundrie 30 minutes to find the dry bag. Here's how he told Chris Cuomo. Take a look.
Can you help us understand how an area that the authorities were told about, you say, by the parents that isn't even that deep into the preserve, wasn't located all these weeks with all the dogs and the teams and everything else until the parents showed up?
Well, listen, the explanation that the FBI gave today certainly makes sense. If that area was underwater, one can certainly understand why you might not have been able to find the items that were located today. If that water had cleared, 2 weeks ago, perhaps could have circled back and looked again. Perhaps they meant to, perhaps they were further deeper into the park and never got back to this park because it is so near the entrance. Chris and Roberta went to this area first, and as happenstance was, they stumbled upon these items.
Just stumbled upon the items. I mean, he was very clear. He said that Chris walked 20 feet off into the bramble. Roberta stayed on the path. And he discovers the dry bag. I'm still a little confused, though, Brian Enten. He's making discoveries while law enforcement is following him. And adjacent to where he is, somewhere finding the backpack, photographing it, and showing the photograph to Chris Laundrie to identify that that's his backpack. Do you have any idea where the remains were, Brian, in relation to the backpack or the dry bag? And if Chris or Roberta ever saw the remains?
All Mr. Bertolino told me were that the human remains were near the backpack. He emphasized to me that this was an area that was flooded and underwater, and he said perhaps that is why the FBI hadn't found the remains and the items earlier. But one thing that I can't stop thinking about is if it was so flooded, how would the backpack be so visible now? And this notebook, I mean, you would think all of these things after being submerged in water for weeks and weeks and weeks wouldn't just be so easily visible right there along the trail.
Well, I can imagine that the backpack might be visible and the notebook might have been in the backpack. Whether the ink is all, smeared off of it from flooding, I don't know. But I will say this, Brian Enten, those Pasco sheriff's deputies were real clear with me about the prowess of Diesel, the cadaver dog. They can smell anything, water or not. So, when we heard that it was waist-deep water at one point, I said, well, that's got to blow away the chances of a dog on a scent. And he said, not at all. The dog can absolutely smell and detect the scent of human remains on the top of the water. So the water wouldn't have been a detriment to Diesel's job, which is, again, I'm so blown away by so much in this story. And then comes today, 30-minute walk from where the Mustang was, 1 to 2 miles, and we couldn't find what Chris Laundrie and Roberta Laundrie found in 30 minutes. I want to just, to that point, Brian, I want to play what Stephen Bertolino said to that, because Chris Cuomo said, you know this looks bad. You know this looks like a coincidence. What do you say about this incredible time frame? And you know that everyone's going to think that you planted something there. And this is what Stephen Bertolino said. Take a look.
What do you make of the suggestion that Mr. Laundrie planted the bag and the backpack?
In nice terms, it's hogwash.
Would the authorities have known what they walked onto the trail with?
Absolutely. They met them at the gate or somewhere nearby. They walked in with them. And more importantly, Chris, this is what I said. Fortunately for the Laundries, the press was following them in the whole time.
What do you know from your clients about how the discovery was made? What was going on? What did they tell you about how it happened?
So, fortunately, one of your rival news people were there with a camera. And I say fortunately because, some people don't believe how the events laid out today. But Chris and Roberta walked into the preserve. It is my understanding that they were followed closely by the two law enforcement personnel. And when I say closely, certainly with an eye shot. And as they went further in, Chris ventured off the trail into the woods. He was zigzagging in different areas. Law enforcement was doing the same thing. And Roberta Laundrie was walking down the trail. And I believe that is on some video to some other news outlet. At some point, Chris locates what's called a dry bag. The dry bag is a white bag laying in the woods, I'll say 20 feet or so off the trail. According to Chris, it was in some bramble. Chris didn't want to pick the bag up because he wanted the law enforcement to see it. This was caught on camera. Chris couldn't find the law enforcement because they were then out of sight because Chris had been in the woods. So he didn't want to leave the bag there with the news reporter standing nearby. So he picked it up. He did meet up shortly with law enforcement. They looked at the contents of the bag. At that time, law enforcement officers showed him a picture on the phone of a backpack that law enforcement had located also nearby and also some distance off the trail. At that point, the Laundries were notified that there was also remains near the backpack, and they were asked to leave the preserve.
So, Brian Enten, I think that is just so incredibly informative of how this all happened this morning. According to, again, Stephen Bertolino, he's a lawyer, he's not law enforcement talking to us. But I do want to tell you this. He also said that he is the person who called law enforcement, and he said the FBI, to report that Brian Laundrie had gone on a hike and not come home. He was not crystal clear on what day it was between the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. But he said that he was the one that called law enforcement, FBI, and said, Brian's gone for a hike and hasn't come back. He also said that the reason everybody thinks that they only reported it on Friday, 5 days later, was that was just the day they filled out the report. So that's also interesting information from Stephen Bertolino. But this is all still so confounding. Where are the Laundries tonight? What has anyone even laid eyes on them?
Yeah, so we have a crew at the house. They are at the house right now. They were basically here this morning, and then they left. They went back to the house, and they haven't been outside the house ever since they left the reserve this morning.
Brian Enten, thank you for that. I want to quickly just bring in News Nation's New York bureau correspondent Tom Negevin, who's at a makeshift memorial for Gabby Petito in her hometown of Blue Point, New York. Tom, what's behind you is a very different feel, and really where our minds should be, because it all comes back to this young woman and so many questions. It must be so frustrating for the people of Northport.
That is it exactly, Ashley. The people here are very frustrated, very quiet, very pensive, a sense of tension in the air, knowing what they now know, what we all know, that the answers appear to be right in front of us, officially a day or two or three away, and they're waiting. This memorial's been growing, you know, for weeks here on Long Island. And tonight and throughout the day today, very, very quiet, very pensive. Gabby's family home just blocks away. We know her family traveled to Jackson, Wyoming just a few days ago to pick up her remains to, as they've been wanting to do for so long, bring Gabby home. And the people here in Blue Point have really just sort of closed around them, rallied behind them, let them know that they are among friends, among an extended family, if you will. And as you know, Ashley, the streets here all around us are covered with teal ribbons that Nicole Schmidt, Gabby's mom, said reminded her of Gabby's eyes, just mementos and reminders all around here as people here wait for answers and closure. And I know, as you do, that that's a trite expression that doesn't really do justice to what they're going through here. But their ordeal needs to be remembered, too, and it certainly is being remembered here tonight.
I'm glad you're there. It's a really pretty shot behind you there, just to remember that this really is all about Gabby at this point. Tom Negevin, thank you so much. My great thanks to Brian Enten as well. Still to come, is it possible that the Laundries found out about their son's death, possible death, the same way that Gabby's family found out about hers? Clothing. What's next? Welcome back to Banfield. Did Brian Laundrie take his secrets to the grave? If the human remains found at the Carlton Reserve today are proven to be him, does that mean that we will not get answers to all of the questions that we still have? Did he kill Gabby Petito? When did he really leave his parents' house and become a fugitive? And how did he die? Fortunately, I'm joined by someone who knows better than anyone how to get answers from the dead, and it is Joseph Scott Morgan. He's a certified death investigator, a distinguished scholar of applied forensics at Jacksonville State University. He's also the host of the podcast Body Bags. Joe, I thought of you right away when I heard that remains were found, but then when I heard underwater and maybe for a very long time, I knew you'd have some answers and some perspective on this. Fill me in.
Hey, look, if these remains are underwater, that's actually kind of a mixed blessing. And I'll tell you why. Because the remains essentially can actually be protected to a certain degree as opposed to having been on top of the ground where scavengers could have gotten to them. The fact that they're in a contained area, perhaps partially buried in mud, that's significant, Ash.
So tell me a little bit about the notebook, because I immediately thought notebook, journal, confession, yep, perhaps, suicide, yep, note, perhaps, all of these, yep, things. And then I remembered water.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's going to be a task for the question document section at the crime lab with the FBI. And they've got a top notch, probably the best one in the world. And if anybody can make sense out of what's in that notebook, if it's been compromised by water, they're the ones that are going to be able to fill in those pieces, Ash.
So the other thing is, if these remains have been here a long time, and if they are partial and then they are difficult to identify, there are those bags. But bags in their own right aren't identifiers. And to that end, they would have to open the bags and see what's inside. That made me think of this moment from the Dr. Phil interview that Gabby Petito's family members gave to Dr. Phil in how they had to identify their beautiful daughter, Gabby. Have a look at this.
And when did they show you the article of clothing?
They described a piece of clothing to me that matched one of her favorite sweatshirts that we knew was hers.
So at one point they presented you with some identifying information so you could verify that it yes. was her.
So if I can add, it was from a local shop.
It was a
so that we knew it was her.
It was her.
So, Joe, if you open up the bags, the backpack, the dry bag, is it entirely possible, in the irony of all of this, that the Laundrie family may have learned that this was perhaps the remains of their son by clothing, just like Gabby Petito's family learned it?
Yeah, quite possibly. But from a scientific perspective, that's not going to be valid for us in our field. That's merely a starting point. You have to get scientific validation. Keep in mind, Ash, more than likely, these remains we're talking about are severely decomposed. So you're going to have to go with dental, DNA. The clothing, any kind of identifier, is just merely the beginning.
Yeah, of course, and I think the Petitos also were getting those same scientific final results, but they knew when they knew. The next step for the forensic investigators, and I am guessing you're going to tell me some of the same things that happened with Gabby's, and that is the entomologists, the forensic anthropologists. Are these the experts who are going to have to come in and start placing the picture together?
Yeah, I think so. And also, Ash, one other thing that people aren't talking about, I want to know how long these remains that are there, how long they've been there. Is this something that took place very short period of time, or is this something a long time ago, you know, that would marry up with the time frame that Gabby went disappeared, or shortly in that period, you know what I'm saying, the last time he was seen?
Sure.
So that's a big question. And also, I'm interested in the water table, the hydrology behind this. Actually met a guy one time, was a forensic meteorologist. How much water has fallen? Can we judge the water table? How the depth, has it risen? Has it fallen? That sort of thing. And why did the water suddenly recede at this point in time? What's happened? Was there a dam release somewhere? To give us an idea more clear, what may or may not have been there, I think that's going to be significant as well.
I think that weather over the last couple of days and weeks has allowed the water to recede. I've only got 10 seconds, but I do have this question. If the remains are in really bad shape, Joe, is it possible to determine that this could have been a suicide? If it were a suicide, would we be able to tell, or might that always be a mystery?
I think it might be a mystery unless it is a gunfire-related suicide, self-inflicted, to a solid area like the skull. Soft tissue is going to be greatly compromised in this case. Hard to rule out hanging, and certainly toxicology is going to be very difficult.
Joseph Scott Morgan, I always know you have the answers. Thank you so much. I hope you'll come back again.
You bet.
Love Joe Morgan. Okay, so it is a focus. It is a purpose. It is a reason to go on after the worst pain that a parent can imagine. A quest for justice when everything else seems lost. But what if justice, too, is lost? Or avoided. When we come back, two parents of children lost to violence, with thoughts for the Petito family and for the Laundries. Welcome back. If this is indeed the end of the almost 5-week search for Brian Laundrie, it is not the end that anyone involved in this case necessarily wanted. Even a years-long manhunt would hold the prospect of eventually finding answers and seeking justice. My next guests suffered the same horrific losses as Gabby Petito's family, but they also saw their children's killers punished. Mark Klass is the father of Polly Klass, who was kidnapped from a slumber party back in 1993 when she was only 12 years old. Polly's body, strangled like Gabby Petito, was found 2 months later. Erin Runyon is the mother of Samantha Runyon. Samantha was kidnapped from her front yard in 2002 when she was only 5. Her body was found the next day. Thank you to both of you for joining me tonight. Erin, can I begin with you with this notion that the Petito family may be looking at the end of this saga, but also this puzzle, and may not get the answers nor the conclusion that they were looking for. You at least saw your daughter's killer punished. What would it have been like if you saw this instead?
You know, I think that any way you slice it, it's tragic. Like, the family is going to have what-if questions forever. I know I do, and I went through the whole experience of a trial, but there are still, there's a timeline, and I don't know everything that happened on it. And unless the perpetrator tells you that, you'll never know. And that is a really hard reality to live with, and I know Mark feels similarly.
Yeah, Mark, I would love to hear your same thoughts on that question.
I'm sorry, Ashley? Same question?
What if things had gone differently for you in justice for Polly? If Richard Allen Davis had just been found, dead in a swamp, would you have felt that there was some justice? Did you want to see him as the Petitos you locked away forever or even go to the death chamber?
Yeah, listen, Ashley, I believe that if Richard Allen Davis had been found dead and there was conclusive proof that he had murdered Polly, it would have been the best possible outcome. And I believe that this is the best possible outcome. That's assuming, as I do, and I believe everybody else is assuming, that Laundry is the person that killed Gabby. Because moving into a trial isn't necessarily about finding your answers, because everything that comes from the defense will be completely and totally self-serving. What it is, in fact, it's reliving the last couple of hours of your child's life in excruciating slow motion as they dissect the minutiae of the occurrences, how he took her, what he did with her, how he murdered her, having to look at evidence, having to be quiet, sitting just a few feet away from the killer, not being able to make eye contact with the jury. It's a horrible thing to go through. And look at Richard Allen Davis. He was put on death row, but the governor of California 2 years ago declared a moratorium on the death penalty, and now he wants to take all of those prisoners and put them into a general population. So I think the demise of the perpetrator, as long as we're sure that that's the individual, is by far the best outcome in this kind of a situation.
So, Aaron, Samantha's killer, Alejandro Avila, same circumstance, sentenced to death, commuted to life. And I wonder for you if you would have just preferred him to go away so that you would not have had decades of his story, of his reality, of his life. Or do you feel, as the Petitos do, that you do want him to suffer in a box for the rest of his natural life?
I think you would have gotten a very different answer from me so close to Samantha's murder. I think over time, our perspective changes. And I have always wanted him to just go away. I resent that he is forever linked to my family in any way, and that his face is always shown in conjunction with my daughter's makes me physically ill. And it is tragic that we have to go through the appellate process, even when he was sentenced to death, that's a mandatory appellate process we go through. I got the call about the first mandatory appeal because of the death penalty on Samantha's 16th birthday. It's a hard process, and it doesn't end with the trial, and it doesn't end with his death. It is something that I will carry with me forever in one capacity or another. But yeah, I wish we could just forget about the perpetrators.
I want to play for you what Gabby's family said about, and really I think it speaks to what you just said, that with time and distance things change. But this is how Gabby's family feels, right now. Take a look at this.
I just hope he's found. I really do.
He'll be found.
No, I mean alive.
I want to look him in the eyes.
I want to see him in a jail cell for the rest of his life, where he's an outdoorsman, being in that concrete cell, and he can't go see those trees and hug those, and smell the fresh air like that.
Just want to get him in a cell for the rest of his life.
We want vengeance and him
justice.
To be
yeah.
And justice, and for him to pay for his crimes and to spend it in a prison for the rest of his life.
Mark Klaas, do you think that the Petitos could find that resolution or that inner peace, that the vengeance might mitigate if, in fact, these remains are Brian Laundrie's? And it is over for them. It is over. There will be no trial. There will be no reliving. They won't maybe get what they're thinking now, but they won't have to go through decades of hell.
Well, Listen, their future is going to be very, very challenging for a long, long time. There's no closure in a situation like this when you have your heart shattered. The best you can hope to do is put those shards back together and move on with a new reality that's informed by the murder and the death of your child. But time gives you an ability to deal with this pain in better ways. And for me, it was very therapeutic to work to make Paulie's death mean something. It became the thing that ultimately made me whole again, but even that took about a decade. It's a very difficult future for them moving forward, but I firmly believe that they're better off with this character dead, this bully and this coward who took the life of their precious daughter. He doesn't deserve to be on the earth if she's not on the earth any longer.
Mark Klass and Aaron Runyon, God bless the both of you. I'm so appreciative for your wisdom, and I thank you for joining me tonight on this extraordinarily difficult night for the Petitos. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I also want the viewers to know that Aaron established the Joyful Child Foundation, dedicated to the prevention of crimes against children, and Mark established Klass Kids with the same purpose. Please, you know, when you have a moment, check out their websites. It's great. I mean, it'll really do what it is that they're looking for, give their kids some meaning and purpose in what happened to them. You know, coming up, it's quite a question. Are the laundries out of the woods? Is this over for them? Surely they will be mourning, right? But is there more to it? And what about the Petitos? Will we ever figure out exactly who killed Gabby, at least on the record, officially? That's a great question, and there are answers next. Assume for a moment the human remains found nearby Brian Laundrie's backpack and notebook are, in fact, Brian's. Where does it leave two grieving families? The case did not end when the medical examiner showed up. Gabby's family still deserves answers. They deserve justice. And Brian's parents, well, tonight they are hunkering down. There's a live picture yet again of a little yellow bungalow. For all intents and purposes, we know them to be in there. We do not know what they are thinking. We do not know what they were doing. We do not know what they know or what they knew. Legally speaking, they may not be out of the woods just yet. Morally, that's going to be up for debate. Joining us now is criminal defense attorney and former prosecutor Mark O'Mara, as well as former federal prosecutor Mary Fulginiti. Thank you to the both of you. So, Mark O'Mara, first and foremost, everyone wants to know the answer to this. Can we still establish that Gabby Petito was murdered and or that Brian Laundrie may have done it? And where does the law go from here just in terms of closing that chapter?
So quickly, the investigation should still continue to who killed Gabby. The FBI and the locals in Wyoming should still continue their investigation to confirm or to get probable cause, which is that first standard, if it was, in fact, Brian Laundrie who did it. Now, at that point, once they focus on him and him alone and they get that probable cause, they exclude everybody else, then they have their investigation done. Unfortunately, though, there's no one to prosecute if it's Brian Laundrie's remains. So the investigation is done, and the family may get some solace out of the fact that probable cause was found that Brian killed Gabby in a cop's mind or in the FBI's mind. But remember, there's only a very few people who can find him legally guilty. That's himself, if he confesses, or truly only a criminal jury after a trial when they decide that he's legally guilty by convicting him beyond a reasonable doubt, and that will not happen if he's already passed.
It's very unsatisfying, Mary. I would only imagine that it's excruciating for the Petitos. What I did want to ask you is if that notebook does contain some kind of a confession or an apology, then, you know, I think we all have some kind of closure. On the record, no, not officially a murderer. We don't even have Gabby's death classified as a murder. It's a homicide, which can be legal. It's very frustrating. So if they decide at least that this was the only suspect, there was no other suspect, they had ample evidence to go forward, all the probable cause in the world that Mark was just talking about, but that they were waiting until they had a physical person before starting that clock and charging him. Will they then release all of that information, solve a lot of the mystery, and give the Petitos perhaps a little more closure as to what on earth happened?
Yeah, you know, the authority is under no obligation to release any of the information. And sadly, we may never know really what happened to Gabby Petito and what led up to, you know, the facts or the circumstances surrounding her ultimate death. But if they do determine that Brian Laundry is solely responsible for her death, I agree. The case will be closed and they will close at least that chapter of the case. But that doesn't mean this investigation is necessarily over. There's other information, if they have other information, that other people may have been involved in some way in concealing or misleading or hampering this investigation. They will continue, I suspect, to investigate those avenues until they have some answers.
Man, I hope that they do release that information to satisfy those who are so angered by this, who feel like they have a stake in it because they were living alongside this journey of this couple and then living alongside all of the media that Gabby left behind. People really feel like they have a kinship with her and they feel as though they deserve, final closure as well. It's an unusual notion, but it's true. So you just left the door open, Mary, for a question after the break, and that is, what about the Laundries? I'm looking at a shopping list here, and it's not one that they would like. False statements, obstruction of justice, aid and abetting, harboring, and maybe even a wrongful death lawsuit. When we come back after the break, are these the things that Mr. and Mrs. Laundry, while potentially grieving the death of their son, may be talking to their lawyer about right now in that little yellow house? Back after this. Now live with attorneys Mark O'Mara and Mary Fulgeniti. Mark, I listed off just off the top of my head, the things that I thought the Laundry parents might be exposed to, depending on what the investigation of their behavior unearths. And that was false statements, making false statements, potential obstruction, aiding and abetting, harboring. And then there is that notion of a potential wrongful death civil suit. Tell me where those are off base or on base.
On base for all of them, however, all of the criminal charges are going to be extraordinarily difficult to prove for the government. One, they don't have Brian's testimony if he's passed, obviously. And the Laundries themselves are not going to testify about what they knew or didn't know. So it would all have to be from outside or extraneous evidence that somehow they can prove by their actions, maybe by phone messages, maybe by some forensic evidence that there was ongoing contact, but very, very difficult. And I don't know that the FBI or even local law enforcement is going to really want to push that issue. However, if the Petito family really wanted to keep this alive, to have some semblance of what we're trying to talk about, closure or justice, a civil suit against Brian and maybe against the family for alleging that they had some input, that could really leave, because within that they get discovery. They could depose the family. They can get some of that evidence. And at some day in the near future, based upon a lower standard than beyond a reasonable doubt, that of a preponderance, they could get a judgment against the estate of Brian, maybe the family, and then at least have that judgment. And I've seen and have had cases where families do that literally just to get that judgment paper.
And some might do it just to get that discovery. I think you make such a good point, Mark. Honestly, I think the discovery at this point would be worth more than whatever blood from a stone you might, be able to get out of the Laundry's son. He didn't seem to have much. Mary, you have mentioned that the search of the house is really of interest to you, and that also there are some rare federal laws that apply, even if the Laundry were misleading. Walk me through that.
Yeah, first of all, with regard to the search of the house, they declared the home a crime scene, which is, not totally typical when it comes to executing a search warrant. And they removed the family, which is typical, and everyone from the home when they conducted the search. What we haven't seen is a search warrant and what they were looking for. And that could be very revealing. It could reveal, not only information with regard to Gabby and the death of Gabby, but could also they could also be looking for information and reveal, you know, whether or not they thought the parents had any involvement in the concealing or the misleading or hampering. And I'm not suggesting they have. I'm just saying that given, you know, some of the initial actions, that's not an unlikely scenario. So that's why I think the search of the house actually could be very revealing. And who they talk to. You know, people do talk. It's very difficult to keep things in. And even though they're not talking to the police and they're not talking to investigators or other authority figures, they could be talking to other family members. And you never know what is said and who will crack.
So, Mark, here's a big question, because a lot of people have been talking about the day the warrant came down on Brian Laundrie and he became a fugitive. What if the Laundrie parents had done some things to help him disappear before that Rubicon? Would they be exposed for that action?
Probably not. An accessory after the fact would have to be something affirmative to assist in him getting away from a crime. He wasn't even charged with a crime at that point. Again, they would have to have proof that Brian told him he committed a crime, and they'll never have any of that. So I think it's going to be very, very difficult moving forward. And again, let's remember one thing about the timeline here. If, in fact, and we've started this segment with the premise that those are Brian's remains, if that's true, and he was there from the very first day he went in, leaving that Mustang out there, then nothing that the family did from that point forward suggests any guilt on their behalf, does it? Because he was gone, he passed away or killed himself, whatever, and they just did what they did with no contact with him, with no assistance to him. So in effect, finding Laundrie's bones or his remains there are going to help exonerate his mom and dad from what we all presume is his ongoing assistance to him that obviously didn't exist if he passed away in that swamp.
Mark O'Meara and Mary Fulgeniti, I can't thank you enough for your wisdom. I will follow this, I think like you will, day to day until I find out what it is they have discovered in that house, in that big raid, and what they have in Wyoming as well. Thank you both. Appreciate it.
Be well.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this has been a really big day, and it will continue to be covered. And so we do invite you to stay with News Nation for the very latest. Our Brian Enten has just been a rock star in terms of just being a phenomenal reporter on this case. And there are so many questions. This isn't over yet. But that is it for us tonight. We're going to see you back here tomorrow night at 10 Eastern. But I would like to leave you with a couple of pictures that, you know what, my team and I just thought were apropos. See you tomorrow.